Welcome to ETF Revolution, a podcast where we focus on all things ETFs. I'm Brian Payone, Relationship Manager and ETF Specialist with SEI. Joining me today is our guest, Ali Doyle. Ali leads business development for NASDAQ's ETF listings business. Ali, thanks so much for participating in our program.
Yeah, thanks, Brian, for having me.
Of course. Over the next few minutes, we'll discuss the role exchanges play in ETF listing and trading. We'll also get into the ins and outs of working with an exchange to launch and list an ETF. So let's start by talking about any interesting trends you're seeing this year with ETF product launches.
Yeah, so launches have certainly not slowed down this year, you know, despite the pullback that we've seen with the IPO market. So right now, you know, we're relatively on par with where we were with launches in 2021. As of June 30th, 2022, there have been 164 net new launches. So, you know, taking into account any delistings. For the same time period in 2021, there were 166 net new launches. And then thinking about some of those recent trends, the single security levered and inverse ETFs have certainly gotten some recent coverage. These are the first of their kind to be launched in the U.S. They've already existed in Europe.
So, yeah, I mean, thinking about some of this thematically, I think it's an extension of the trend we've been seeing over the last few years since the ETF rule or 6c11. Really, this regulation lowered the barriers for managers to enter the ETF space. And I think you saw some interesting strategies launch not long thereafter. Options overlay for one, defined outcome, and now to your point, single stock.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then, you know, a couple other points. We continue to see mutual fund to ETF conversions, but also SMA to ETF conversions. So that's been interesting. And these tend to be actively managed strategies. Thinking about active in general, there haven't been as many semi-transparent ETF launches this year. They've mostly been, you know, either passive or active transparent.
Yeah, look, I also think that's, you know, a trend that's become a lot more popular since 6c11 also. I remember looking back at the beginning of this year for the stats on 2021, and it was like 307 of 470 ETF launches during 2021 were active ETFs. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I was a little bit surprised by that. You know, so to put that in context, as we sit here in August of 2022, there's 912 active ETFs. So looking back on the 307 that launched in 2021, roughly a third of them of the 912 launched last year. Now, wow. That's a long way from where we were a decade ago. I mean, think back, there was only a handful of active ETFs and the firms that had them really struggled with distribution.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, to that point, who is launching all of these new products? It's definitely been a mix of, you know, established ETF firms you're already familiar with, a lot of new boutique issuers, and also firms which have traditionally played in the mutual fund space that are just getting into ETFs for the first time.
I think that also piggybacks your mutual fund ETF conversion, which we've seen a lot mm-hmm. more of. And I think also thinking about some of the firms that the more boutique and newer types of managers who are launching ETFs, they're probably folks who, or in a lot of cases, they're folks who, you know, resisted ETFs for a long time. But now with the rise of the semi-transparent active, it gives them a new avenue to explore ETFs. You know, I think a lot of the interest that we're seeing in semi-transparent structures, we're having a lot of conversations around them. In many cases, the folks that want to initiate that conversation end up launching in the fully transparent active space. And look, I don't think that's meant to be, and that's definitely not meant to be a knock on the semi-transparent structures. I think they have a lot of merit. I think managers of many types should consider them. But I'm just kind of, from my background and from my experience, some of the things I've seen, a lot of those conversations tend to go the fully transparent route. But it's like ETFs 20 or 30 years ago, fixed income ETFs a decade ago, these semi-transparent structures are going to benefit from the providers that have them going out and talking about them and educating the community. I think it's just a slow build, an educational build, but I'm sure in time we'll be seeing, you know, more of those launch as well.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously right now those semi-transparent wrappers are only approved for, you know, domestic equity strategies. So, you know, time will tell and we'll continue to see how that space evolves.
Yeah, another great point. So let's switch gears for a minute. Most of the people listening to this probably have a good idea what the exchanges do, at least when it comes to individual stocks. But what role do the exchanges play in exchange-traded funds?
Yeah. So, you know, I can really only speak with the way NASDAQ approaches ETF issuer relationships, but we really look to be an extension of the full issuer's team, and we provide support in a variety of areas. This includes legal and regulatory guidance, co-marketing tactics, and ensuring there are fair and orderly markets for ETFs through our DLP programs. So, you know, starting at the beginning, when an ETF issuer is looking to launch a new ETF, they will first file with the SEC. As you mentioned, Brian, with the ETF rule from 2019, certainly lower barriers to entry for issuers to bring new products to market. So lots of new issuers for us at NASDAQ to be working with. Particularly for those new issuers, our ETF listings team will play a consultative role and, you know, provide insight into the ETF industry that would be relevant for those respective strategies. And we can also provide content that can help those issuers educate their internal teams that really might not be as familiar with the ETF industry. So we tend to hear questions such as, which market makers are best suited for my product? Should I create my own trust or leverage a third party? And how can my firm leverage the NASDAQ brand to help market my product? Issuers also reserve the ticker they would like to use through their listing exchange, so we're able to support them with that as well. But so, Brian, to actually throw one of those questions back to you, you know, how issuers are choosing to either build out their own trust or leverage a third party, such as SEI, how do you and your team think about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to be clear for the folks listening, the two options are to either form your own trust, where the manager would need to put their own board in place, hire a chief compliance officer and a legal counsel, and would also need to develop relationships with all of the service providers separately. And that includes your fund admin and accounting, custody, transfer agent, distributor, the list goes on and on. Or the second option is to go out to a third-party trust or an outsourced series trust that already has all these providers in place. But to answer the question, it depends on the overall strategy for that particular firm's ETF business. In the series trust option, if a manager sees itself launching only a handful of funds, let's say less than 10 or so, then the third-party trust becomes very appealing. There's a lot of scale to be had from joining a third-party trust that already has all these providers in place and allows the manager to benefit from that scale and share in costs with the other managers and funds on the trust. As far as the build-your-own trust option goes, that may make sense for a lot of managers as well. One of the primary regulatory requirements is that a board is primarily independent, but one of the benefits of building your own trust is that it allows you to have a more direct relationship with the board and be involved in recruiting those initial board members. But there's some downsides as well. There's a lot of costs associated with building and hiring your own board. Then there's also the ongoing activities associated with managing and maintaining those relationships with the service providers. There's also the time spent preparing for and reporting to the board, and all those things can really stretch resources. It's one of the many reasons why a lot of managers choose the outsourced series trust model. At the end of the day, though, it's really a business decision that each particular manager needs to make.
Yeah, those are good points.
You know, one thing I actually want to go back to is your initial response. You had mentioned your DLP program. So can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what impact that has on managers?
Yeah. So to take a step back for anyone who's not familiar, a market maker is a broker dealer that regularly provides two-sided quotes to clients. And when a new ETF comes to market, an issuer will select a primary market maker who is incentivized to meet certain market quality metrics and, you know, receive incentives, you know, tied to those efforts. Other exchanges refer to these firms as lead market makers. NASDAQ classifies them as designated liquidity providers, or Brian, as you said, DLPs. So those are really interchangeable terms. NASDAQ currently has four requirements as part of our program, and we are adding a fifth auction quality requirement in a few weeks, and that's really a direct result of issuer feedback we received. There are 14 firms that currently act as DLPs, and we're always happy to make introductions for issuers looking to get connected with these firms. And then along with choosing a lead, an issuer is able to bring on a secondary DLP to help support market quality. And we've seen that mostly happen for newer products or illiquid products.
How many of the funds, or I guess I should say, how many of the managers you work with tend to utilize the secondary DLP program?
It's definitely grown over the past couple of years. We've had the secondary program in place for a while, but we formalized it in mid-2021. So we've definitely seen a lot of growth. As I said, it's mostly for those newer products, or a lot of existing established managers have leveraged it, again, for products that are still more thinly traded, looking to, you know, take on some additional DLP support. And I think it's also great, you know, it's a great opportunity for those DLPs that may not have, you know, relationships with certain, you know, new firms, and, you know, it's not as large of a responsibility as being a primary DLP. But again, they are receiving certain incentives tied to those market quality efforts.
Well, that makes sense. Thanks for the insight. So for anybody new to ETFs, they may hear about how ETFs have two different markets, a primary market and a secondary market. Help us understand this a bit and how each of those apply to the exchanges.
Yeah, so the key difference between, you know, these two markets is really thinking about from where the liquidity is being derived. So starting with the primary market, the liquidity there is really a function of the value of the underlying shares that back the ETF. Firms called authorized participants, which are self-clearing broker-dealers, can either create new or redeem existing shares of the ETF. Exchanges really are not involved with the primary market activity because this is taking place between those authorized participants and the ETF issuer directly. But when thinking about the secondary market, where liquidity is more a function of the value of the ETF shares traded on exchange, you know, again, that's really where the exchange really comes into play. Market makers are much more involved here as they are key liquidity providers in that ETF ecosystem, ensuring continuous and efficient ETF trading in the secondary market. And I know this is one key component to ETF education that issuers really look to stress, not only with potential investors, but also with their internal stakeholder teams. You know, just ensuring that there's a strong understanding of both of these layers of liquidity in the primary and the secondary market, because, you know, that's important to understand, you know, to know the best way to trade these products.
Yeah, look, I think it's one of the important and key concepts when it comes to thinking about and evaluating ETFs, especially for end investors, when you think about, to your point, you know, trading, executing in these products. So let's think about the launch process for a second. At what point in that process do ETF managers, or I guess at this point, prospective managers, typically engage with you guys?
Yeah, so issuers tend to meet with all three of the ETF listing exchanges to best understand our offerings before making their final selection. We tend to speak with issuers roughly 2 to 3 months prior to their targeted launch date. But we've also developed relationships with issuers far sooner in their process and can help support product development ideas, particularly if those issuers are leveraging a NASDAQ index or if they think their ETF is not going to fall within the ETF rule parameters. And, you know, we're able to discuss with them the best way to approach, particularly from, you know, a legal standpoint. Brian, what have you found? When do ETF issuers tend to start working with the SEI team?
Yeah, so I think for us it really depends. On whether the manager or that firm is a client already. So if we have an existing client that utilizes us for, you know, some other product wrapper, you know, mutual fund or whatever else, or already has ETFs with SEI that we service, then I think we're engaged really early in the process. It's something they'll come to and start socializing an idea with us. Or in the earlier example, if it's someone that, you know, runs a separate wrapper and is thinking about getting into ETFs, there's a lot of education many times that goes on up front. So that lead time can be very long, sometimes not, but usually we're engaged at the very early stages. For managers who aren't a client of ours or who, you know, may be a new manager, sometimes we're involved a little bit later in the process. And I would say that mainly has to do with the plans that they have. Typically, that plan is a little bit further along in the process by this point. Like, they've decided that they are going to go down this path. They've have an idea for a product in mind. So tend to be engaged a little bit later in the process for non-existing clients or for newer managers. But either way, I think in either one of these scenarios, my advice to any prospective manager would be to engage with as many players, you know, whether it be exchanges, as many of those, or, you know, service providers of any sort, as many of them as possible as early in the process to really get the education up and to, you know, kind of socialize the ideas and make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think one of the things that I kind of think about, you know, from the development of the industry over the years is really how crowded the ETF industry has gotten. Maybe crowded's not the right word, but I think some would say it's getting crowded. It's true. I mean, look, I think from an investor standpoint, you wouldn't. There's no shortage of choice. It's a great thing for investors. You know, any strategy that they want, for example, they can buy an ETF format, and I think that's a great thing. But from a manager's perspective, how do they compete for airtime?
Yeah. Well, so to start off, you're definitely right. With over 2,900 U.S. listed ETFs at this point, issuers definitely need to take the time to think about their distribution and marketing strategies for their products. So in terms of how they can best leverage NASDAQ's co-marketing strategies, you know, to help with that effort, it depends which area of the market they're looking to access, such as retail investors, high net worth individuals, or financial advisors. So, you know, I can touch on a couple of the, you know, popular marketing tactics that, you know, we're able to bring to issuers. Issuers can be featured on our interview segment called Trade Talks, and that's with our global markets reporter, Jill Malandrino. So these are, you know, great 3 to 5 minute segments for the issuer to give both a broad market update as well as, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, one of their products. We're also able to display tower shots on NASDAQ's tower in Times Square. For anyone who's walked through Times Square, it's pretty hard to miss. And we're able to put up these tower shots both on launch day to commemorate, you know, a new product, but also if they hit an AUM milestone or a notable anniversary. And then, you know, both through our organic social media channels, viewership on NASDAQ.com, along with paid social media campaigns that we're able to work on with issuers, there is definitely a lot of support that we can provide, especially those new issuers that are looking to get their brand seen by potential investors. And this is really just skimming the surface, I'll say. I mean, we love working closely with issuers both before and after their launch on how to execute an effective marketing strategy.
So that's actually interesting. It leads me to another question, which actually may tie back to kind of the previous points we were making. What does the ongoing dialogue look like for you? And who do you tend to work with at some of these issuers? Like what roles do you tend to engage with?
Yeah, so once the product is launched, you know, from the ETF listings business side, we work closest with capital markets teams and, you know, sometimes product development teams. And then our, you know, marketers at NASDAQ tend to have, you know, sort of parallel dialogue going on with the marketing teams at those issuers to really kind of get into the weeds on some of the marketing tactics that we can offer. So a lot of the times we will schedule recurring calls, whether it's monthly or quarterly, you know, to maintain those strong ties of communication. And it gives us a chance to discuss, you know, relevant regulatory updates that might be coming up, potential changes to our liquidity programs, and of course, you know, be kept up to date on what's next in the issuer's pipeline.
Which is important, certainly as many of these issuers look to, you know, probably launch more than one ETF, right? It's important to understand what's coming next to be able to, you know, kind of set those, you know, align those resources.
Yeah. I mean, really overall, you know, our main objective at NASDAQ is to build these strong, holistic relationships with issuers and not just think about one product, but really how we can help the issuers grow their brand and product lineup, you know, hopefully into the future.
Which makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, you think about the kind of the three silos of ETFs from somebody who's going to bring them to market, right? You really kind of need to nail down the plan in three areas. The first is distribution, which I think is a lot of the marketing that we're talking about. The second is product strategy. Again, some of the things we've touched on here. What is the lineup going to look like in the third product, fifth product, 10th product? What are the end goals? And then, you know, what partners do you work with? Who do you know? What exchanges do you work with? What market making partners? So I think, you know, the insight that you guys provide is invaluable to managers. So let's close with any tips or last minute advice you might give to managers thinking about launching an ETF.
Yeah, you know, so I think we hit on it, but I would definitely say marketing and distribution strategy is key. You know, before being at NASDAQ, that was my background in, you know, ETF distribution. And I think that's just definitely one component of a firm strategy that needs to be considered, whether it's wholesalers leveraging a third party distribution, you know, platform or, you know, something along those lines, just to, you know, make sure that you're getting your products out there in the right fashion.
Excellent. Appreciate the details there. Ali, thanks so much for sharing your perspective and insight. We really appreciate your time and expertise. For those listening, if you have any questions, please direct them to either Ali or I. Our contact details are included on the invitation to this episode. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes in our series, and thank you for tuning in.